I am starting the podcast recorder here. For those who don't know, we post this on our Outside the Box podcast a week later. So that recording of this shows up the following Tuesday. Tracy, good evening to you. So good to see you. Doc, you ready, man? Was your day good? Did you get a walk in?
We had a great day. Yeah, I got two walks in.
Your steps.
Three walks. I walked to work. I walked at lunch with Ernie, and then I walked home. So I had three walks today.
Man, I am embarrassed to look at my steps today. I think it's like, I hope it's like in the thousands. Because
I already have 10,000 on my Oura Ring.
Do you really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm hoping to be in the four digits. That's like, that would be shocking if I'm in the four digits.
I'm gonna do a couple of push-ups after the show tonight too.
I believe it. I tell you what, I spent the weekend with you guys over Easter, and I had a hard time getting you out of the gym. I was like, "Hey, let's go do something fun."
It's really hard to drag me outside of the gym sometimes. It really is. And if you do, I'll be out on the bike or something.
Yeah, you know? It was just to take more walks or to move more. And you were inspiring me this weekend, and I didn't live up to what I saw this past weekend today.
I didn't get quite enough guitar practice in this weekend.
That's true.
I didn't quite get enough. If I miss one day of playing guitar, I notice it. If I miss 2 days of playing the guitar, Jenny and you, family will notice it. If I miss 3 days in a row of playing the guitar, everybody notices. The audience, the world notices it. So I have to practice every day.
And in advance, we appreciate that. We thank you. But you know what else we thank you for? We thank you for answering our health and wellness questions.
Focus on that. Let's get to it.
And that's what we're going to do, guys. I'm going to start with an Ozempic question. And just as a reminder, guys, if you're with us live, go ahead and put your comments or questions in the comments. We're going to get to that real shortly here in the next 10 minutes or so. And then we'll answer live questions. This question is Ozempic appropriate for someone who needs to lose 20 pounds? If not, what else do you recommend? I love this question. I know there's different schools of thought. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, certainly. 20 pounds is a lot. That's a lot of weight. That's not a minimal amount of weight. That's a lot of weight to lose, and it's very hard to do it by yourself. Diet and exercise just don't work really well for most people. I mean, exercise definitely won't work for that. It's great for you, but it will not work to lose 20 pounds. It's going to take a lot of dietary changes to do that. So certainly it's appropriate for it. Ozempic kind of gets demonized by a lot of people because we need to reserve it for the diabetics. Well, if you're 20 pounds overweight, you're probably insulin resistant at the very least. So yeah, it's a great way to lose weight. It's very safe unless you've had pancreatitis or something called MEN syndrome number 2, medullary cancer of the thyroid, which you haven't had. But in any event, yes, definitely appropriate. Most people, would appreciate that help. The thing about Ozempic, and now, of course, it's not just indicated for diabetics, it's indicated for weight loss in the form of Wegovy, the exact same medication. So certainly it is indicated, and there's, the problem is insurance paying for it, but now that you can get semaglutide compounded, that makes it a lot easier because insurances just don't want to pay for this stuff unless you're diabetic. And same thing with Mounjaro, which is Zepbound in the weight loss form. So yeah, definitely. We use it all the time for that.
Interesting you brought the insurance thing because in today's Common Sense MD episode with Renee, you talk about the donut hole in regards to coverage with Medicare. It was fascinating. That's where my brain went because my brain's been all about that episode today. We're going to keep going here, guys. Thank you for that answer, Doc. Great question around Ozempic. And yes, there's so many people who fall in that range.
If for some reason your insurance, Medicare won't cover it anyway, really, but if somehow you did get it to cover Ozempic, you would fall in the donut hole, but you wouldn't want to eat the donuts, because when you get on that, you will not want to eat sugar and donuts and things.
Was that a joke, or was is that a was that a Dr. Rogers?
No,
joke?
It's just not really a joke. That's not, you'd never laugh at my joke. So you and Katie and Carter never laugh at my jokes.
Well,
that wasn't really a joke. It's true. I mean, you know, Ozempic's expensive, and if somehow Medicare covered it, which it won't, then it would throw you into the donut hole very soon. But the good thing about it, you won't want to eat donuts because it's sugar, and you won't eat sugar on Ozempic.
You mix.
So not really a joke, just kind of ironic.
You mix.
I'm trying to make this show interesting, okay?
You mixed education there with, you know, entertainment. I love it.
Yeah.
Guys, y'all got a 2-for-1 right there. All right, we're going to keep moving here. Thank you for that question that came in over email. I love this question here, a super contextual hormone question. And I also love when people are learning different things on different shows and come in here with questions around it. It's so interesting. Question is, I heard someone on a hormone podcast this week say that their opinion is that ascorbic acid is not a good form of vitamin C for topical use. They claimed it was actually oxidative rather than antioxidative. They said an ascorbal or ascorbate is what we should use. What do you think about that? And there's a follow-up. I'm going to ask you this one first.
Oh, okay. Well, in my opinion, you know, vitamin C is an antioxidant. It's water soluble. It is true that there's two forms of it, you know, ascorbic acid, which is the one you're usually going to see in vitamins. And it's certainly the purest form of vitamin C, no doubt about it. Now, there is one called sodium sorbate, and that's the one that we use when we use IV vitamin C. Because when you put it in the vein, you know, you don't want to get the veins too acidic. So what the ascorbate does is bring the pH up, the acidity down. So they both have their pros and cons. For somebody that on the skin, you know, really the best form of it, I think, is what's called CE ferulic. It has another ferulic acid in it. So, you know, most people tolerate it well. If you're a person that, you know, you put it on your skin and it really irritates it too much, then you can use the more base forms like sodium ascorbate on your skin. But most people still prefer the acid form because it kind of clears off debris, helps depigmentation and all this. But, you know, because you want it, that turnover of cells on your face that has damage to it. But certainly, you know, both forms to me, I've always thought of them as both antioxidants. You know, I didn't know it was vitamin C day. Did I hear you say that?
April 4th
is vitamin C day.
Yep.
Is it in honor of Linus Pauling?
I don't know how they came up with that date. It has to have something to do with Linus Pauling, I would imagine.
You know, he really got demonized by making all these claims about vitamin C, but it turns out it's true. And certainly it's a very potent medication that we use IV all the time for many reasons, cancer included. It's great for sepsis. You know, unfortunately, the hospitals, most of them don't realize that. But, you know, if you were septic or I was septic or family, I would beg for IV vitamin C to turn around sepsis. So, you know, what I would say is if you're one of those people that is real sensitive to acid, like even on your stomach, the ascorbate is definitely probably going to be easier, but it's probably not going to be as potent or as pure form as the ascorbic acid. The other thing about sodium ascorbate, You know, if you're a person that's really sensitive to sodium from hypertension, it's a little bit overplayed. Sodium is, then you have to watch that too, a little bit with that form of it. But yeah, it's a great question. You know, I don't think anybody's really asked me that before, but,
It goes on to say, and this is just kind of a curiosity type question. They also continue to say they wouldn't even use the ascorbic acid form internally. I don't think you agree with that, but curious to your thoughts. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I would. You know, again, I that's what I do. And I think most people do it that way. Unless, I mean, if you have a really acid stomach and, you know, a lot of GERD and it does bother you. I mean, certain forms of citrus can bother some people. So if you really do think that that is upsetting your stomach, then you could use the sodium ascorbate for sure. Or use a little baking soda with it if you want. But there's so many, you know, pros to taking vitamin C. And, you know, not many people can't tolerate the ascorbic acid. But that's a really good point, though. Really good. IV, definitely sodium ascorbate. But very good question.
Yeah, super interesting. And that is very timely, which is awesome. April 4th, National Vitamin C Day. I love it. And I love, Carter, thank you for putting up the special we're running in our offices around vitamin C, 15% off, I believe, all month long. And we're going to keep moving here. This is a thyroid question. I have a couple of thyroid questions here. I'll ask them together. Is having a TPO of 31 considered Hashimoto's?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. Is that typically how you would diagnose it, just through that one TPO number, or is there a number of different ways you do it?
Yeah, you know, there's an antithyroglobulin antibody that we sometimes check, but TPO is the one that's really kind of diagnostic of it. So, you know, that's a low level, but it's still what I would consider Hashimoto's. So if you have that going, it doesn't mean that your thyroid at this point may not even be low. Because I've seen people with no symptoms and normal thyroid function test still have a TPO that's slightly positive, but it usually means you're on the border of tripping you over into thyroiditis and then kind of destroying some of your thyroid function. But yeah, for most people, I would consider it that.
All right. Thank you for that. And I'm going to go into a thyroid function question. Is black seed oil beneficial for thyroid function? If so, which do you recommend? I know I feel like we've talked about black seed oil at some point. I didn't put it together with thyroid function. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's very beneficial for thyroids. They call it cumin. But, you know, I was reading something not long ago about out the mechanism of action, but I can't recall what they were saying about it. But yes, it's a great thing really for any autoimmune disease. Somehow it just calms down a lot of the cytokines and some of the interleukins. I think that's how it works. But tumor backs down tumor necrosis factor, the TNF alpha. But yeah, it's a great. Or I really need to do a podcast if I haven't. I don't think I've done one on that. At least it's been years if I have.
I don't think on black seed oil. Is there a form you like, a brand you like at all for this listener here?
I don't think I know we don't carry it. Nah, I don't particularly. I'd be hesitant to tell you. Form, but I'll do one on black seed oil. I need to do a podcast on that. I'll research the differences in some of the different brands because I just hate to blurt it out and be wrong. So
what we'll do with this one, guys, is we will we're going to kind of bookmark this and we'll go do a little deeper dive. Thank you for that, by the way. This is often how we get our topics for the Common Sense MD podcast. So we'll do a deeper dive on black seed oil. And in short, it is very beneficial for thyroid function. So thank you for that question. Let's get to this one right here. Would you be concerned with an AST of 46 on labs or is that a level that can go up and down often? I'll be honest, I'm not sure I know what AST is.
Well, it's a liver transaminase representing liver function. But no, that's not a real high number. I see that all the time, and it really doesn't bother me too much. You know, there's some other functions you look at too, you know, if you want to bug it out a little bit, like the ALT, alk phos, bilirubin, that type of thing. But no, that's not too uncommon. You can get that really from a little bit of a fatty liver. Sometimes even a little bit of alcohol may affect that. So no, it's not overly concerning. I certainly would just follow it, and it can go up and down a little bit. So, but not concerning, but worthy of follow-up. Make sure it doesn't keep climbing, but certainly not high like you'd see with acute hepatitis or something like that. So,
all right. Great question there. Thank you, Doc, for that answer. Real quick, I a lot of times I'll have a few of my buddies text me in questions for the show. One, just around where they are in life. And I have a feeling that, you know, there's going to be a couple people in here in similar scenarios. So I'm just going to start off here. And guys, we are taking live questions. So I see One Step Forward. Thank you. We're going to get to that in just a second. If you have questions for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. And to the people on Instagram, I see Queen Regina over here. We will definitely be answering questions over there as well. So if you have a question, you can put it in the comments. Okay, so this is around fasting. A lot of my friends are starting to do extended fast over between 24 and 72 hours. One in particular, I've already talked to you a little bit about it, was they're on a blood pressure medicine. Can you real quickly just give kind of tell the audience here what you told me when going on a fast with a
blood pressure? Yeah, I would, you know, if you're going on a fast and you're on one or two blood pressure medicines, you might watch your blood pressure real closely and maybe even half your blood pressure medicines, because it's usually going to drop. Mm. You know, and you just don't want to drop out too much. You know, make sure you stay hydrated. I'm assuming you're doing a water fast.
Yeah.
But you know, anything longer than 3 days, you need to start looking at your electrolytes. But 3 day fast is probably okay. I did one time, and you know, it was actually, it's weird because it's a good way to kind of detox, and also you get a lot of mental clarity when you do a fast like that that's over 24 hours. It's and you quit being hungry, to be honest with you. So so I'd watch your blood pressure, though. Maybe half your blood pressure medications and play it by ear.
So with the 72, would you stop taking like zinc altogether? You know, if you're I take zinc every day. So if
zinc, I'd be careful. Some people do fine on it, but it kind of nauseates me to take it on an empty stomach.
Okay.
But certainly vitamin D is probably not going to bother you. But you know, you could hold off on all your vitamins if you wanted.
It's super interesting. A lot of my buddies are getting into these 48, 72 hour fasts, and they do really well on them. Every single one that's done it has given me really positive feedback. But some of these, like, you know, I know there's a certain amount of bone broth you can have, and so they're kind of getting deep into it, which is cool.
That's great. Yeah, that's a great thing to do. You know, even if you fast, you know, once a week, just don't eat. That's a great little strategy. And maybe once a month, do a 2 to 3 day fast.
Yeah.
If you can do it. I mean, but great.
That's super interesting. All right, guys, we're going to get to the live questions. If you have one, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to get to every single one tonight. We got through those quicker than I anticipated. Let's see here where we're at. Let's go to Stephanie over on Facebook. Do you have any suggestions for POTS syndrome? We've gotten a few questions around this, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, Doc.
Yeah, well, you know, we've seen a lot of POTS, which stands for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And we're seeing a lot of it in long hauler COVID patients. You know, orthostatic means when you stand up, your blood pressure drops out. But at the same time, your heart rate's going up. That's a really, really can be a pretty debilitating syndrome to have. We usually see it more in younger females. But the official diagnosis is made usually by a cardiologist through a tilt table test. But you can almost just kind of diagnose it in your office by doing different blood pressure and heart rate measurements in different positions. We don't, you know, hang anybody on a tilt table, but you can certainly pretty much guess what it is. I use a lot of, they say, well, increase your salt and all this and cut your caffeine out. There's a medicine that I've used a few times for it called evabridine, I-V-R-A-B-I-D-I-N-E. I think that's how you spell it. And I learned about that about 3 years ago, I guess, when I was taking a long COVID course out in California. And one of the cardiologists there that was really innovative used it, and I implemented it in the few cases that I see of that, and it worked really well. So you didn't have to use a beta blocker to, you know, slow the heart rate down. And the evabridine doesn't seem to have side effects like a beta blocker would. So really interesting. Yeah. So look, it is a prescription medicine. So if you haven't investigated that medication for that, I certainly would.
And another thing, Stephanie, is I did a podcast episode with Dr. Mark Ellis out of Atlanta. He is a neurology chiropractor, and super interesting episode on POTS. He goes deep. So if you get a chance, search for Performance Medicine POTS. It should come up over on YouTube if you want to dive a bit deeper. Great question there. Thank you for putting that in there. Okay, we're going to get to one step forward here over on YouTube. I was going to try methylene blue. I drank a 16-ounce water with vitamin D drops and a LMNT electrolyte mix. Could I mix methylene blue with that? Okay, so she's asking, could they mix methylene blue in this water?
I do.
And the second question
is... I do my perfect aminos with it. And what else? I put three things in there. I put my methylene blue in with my protein powder that you got me, and vitamin D drops. I mean, you know, you could just do that under the tongue. I'd probably just do that separately under the tongue if you're doing the drops, because you're going to swallow the methylene blue. But, and didn't you give me some LMNT electrolyte? Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, you can mix it. No problem with that. But I'd do the drops separate, the vitamin D drops separately, probably. Methylene blue is just good for everything. It really is. I think it's a pretty good anti-inflammatory. There's so many positive benefits to methylene blue, and just very few cautions with it, to be honest with you. Even combining it with the SSRIs, I think it's fine. If you take a deep dive on it. I know they warn against it, but I've done a deep dive. I haven't found a problem with it. You can do that.
All right. One step forward. I hope that helps. As you guys know, if you're with us every week, we talk about methylene blue all the time. And I'm not sure I've heard Doc say, it doesn't work well for something. But the inflammation, I would imagine, it's super helpful for. There we go. It works well for Ike and Izzy.
This does not work good on dogs' fur. That's the only place I would not take it. But if your dogs get into it, you're going to have to have a hard time getting that out. Plus, out of your carpet or your rugs.
It's not good for carpet or for dog hair. Thank you for that, team. Yes, great question. One step forward. Thank you for putting that in there. I hope that helps some of you guys. Okay, let's keep going. I see Rose has a question over on Facebook. Great to see you, Rose. Hope you're doing well. What do you suggest for arthritis pain? Great question.
Gosh, there's so many different things for that. Of course, my best over-the-counter is going to be turmeric. It's just great. I take it every day. MSM is a really good one. Chondroitin is a good one. Glucosamine hasn't shown that to be that effective. I also like the collagen powders. I think that helps a little bit. You know, I like low dose naltrexone. That's another favorite of mine. You know, if I need to reach for a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, I like Mobic or Celebrex. I mean, a lot of people take those chronically. LDN is one of my favorites for that. Low dose naltrexone. Go to some of the podcasts we've done on that. Moving heat works good. I think heat therapy is really good. I think infrared sauna is good. I think red light therapy is good for it. But you know, most people that get my age, they have some arthritis pain. I certainly have it in my back. I feel your pain. I really do. I also have it in one thumb. From playing guitar. That's the first place osteoarthritis usually hits, and is in this joint right here. But certainly I've had PRP injections in my both knees and shoulder, and it works amazingly well. So some of those things are my favorites.
You know, it's interesting what you said. I'm sure everyone in here can relate. It's like you kind of know that we're going to deal with some sort of arthritis at some point. And I think the big problem is when people stop moving, you know, you start to feel that arthritic pain and then you stop moving, you stop doing things, and then it gets worse and you become less mobile. So it's kind of it's a cycle that I know a lot of what you're talking about can help break that cycle. But I know you would never like, for an arthritis patient, like you would never say, don't do anything now, right? You still want to get out there and move.
Yeah, but sometimes it's very painful.
Yeah.
I mean, so you have to have something to calm down the inflammation. The other thing I didn't mention is a great diet.
Yeah.
You know, don't eat sugar. A lot of times I have people that get on just a really different type of diet, even carnivore, anything that leaves out sugar, and their joints get tremendously better just by doing that. Certainly we look at straightening out the gut because a lot of inflammation starts there, but it can certainly be in your joints. And I definitely commiserate with anybody with arthritis pain. If you have one of the really inflammatory like rheumatoid arthritis, that's a little different ballgame as well. But I love LDN for that too.
It's a great question and a great topic there, Rose. Thank you for bringing that up. I don't think we can talk about that enough because it's so common. And, you know, I think a lot of people just kind of accept it, you know, like I'm supposed to be hurting because I'm getting to a certain age or I'm getting a bit older. So thank you for bringing that up. Rose, let's get to Chrissy here. Good evening. Good evening to you, Chrissy. Last Tuesday, I had an angioplasty, 85% blockage of the left anterior descending artery. The cardiologist insists that I take a statin. I'm concerned after reading so many negative side effects, i.e. blood sugars, muscle damage, etc. Is there an alternative to statins? And Christy, I just want to commend you for asking this question. I think that's the first step is, and this is what Doc says a lot, asking why. Is there an alternative? So Doc, I'll let you take it from here. Great question, Chrissy.
Yeah. Again, I'm not one that slaps everybody on a statin. I don't particularly like them a whole lot because I've seen all those side effects on, a lot of patients. And there's no doubt that, it has a lot of side effects. But if I had that myself, I would be on a small dose of a statin. I would do it. And I would take Crestor rosuvastatin, which is it's really water soluble, pretty well tolerated compared to some of the others that they'll push on you. But I think I would, because there's not because it lowers your cholesterol, but because it helps pain. And there's some evidence in a case like yours, especially when you have that amount of blockage in your LAD, the Widowmaker, that it may partially reverse some of it. So if it was me, I would be on a really low dose statin. You know, I don't think you need the high doses. And again, I'm not doing it to lower your cholesterol particularly, but I'm doing it for the other benefits. And I know you probably don't have high cholesterol. It's amazing how some people think they'll slap everybody on statin. I don't know if I told this last week, but a few weeks ago, I had a patient that had been hospitalized for fainting spells. The workup was negative, but this guy's a diabetic and his sugars aren't the best controlled. So his A1C was about 8. So the hospitalist put him on a statin. And, you know, without even looking at his cholesterol level. So he doesn't like it, you know. And so it comes to me, his baseline, because I've done, you know, many Clevelands on, his baseline cholesterol, total cholesterol, is 88. So the hospital's put him on a statin because he's a diabetic with it. But he didn't even look at the level of cholesterol he had. You need some cholesterol in your system. So that was a mistake. I immediately took him off of it. But in your case, I would probably take a low-dose Crestor, even if it's 5 milligrams, 3 times a week. You'd be able to do that. So if it was me, alternative to statins, you know, one of my favorite, I don't think they're going to work quite like that for what you need it for. You know, there's a new PCSK9 inhibitors, I think they call them, that don't have the side effects of the statins that will lower cholesterol pretty well, but I'm not sure about their effects on inflammation and reversing some of the atherosclerosis. So the jury's out on that. But look at everything else. Make sure you're taking an aspirin and making sure your blood pressure is good and doing all those other things that you need to be doing. And you know, I put a lot of people on EDTA. I take it just because my calcium score went from 0 10 years ago to 92 last year. So there's a little bit of plaquing. So I just don't take it around when I take other vitamins, or certainly not minerals, because it'll bind them up. But it's a good little chelator. It's very safe. You don't have to do it IV. You just do it daily through pill form. So you might look at that as well. I mean, some people would go the IV form of chelation in your case. There's a lot of cardiologists who do it to themselves when they have something like you do, but they won't admit to it, but because it's kind of outside the box a little bit. Anyway, just interesting. You'll do fine. Just keep an eye on things, and I probably would though.
It's a great question, Chrissy, and one, you know, because we get a lot of statin questions in office as well as on this show and the lives. It's amazing to me just how unique, you know, the answers are and how everyone's a little bit different. So, you know, this
it would take. It's pretty well known that, pardon me, but that you'd have to have 1,000 people on a statin to save one person from a cardiac event, not a death, but an event. So that's 1,000 people taking those to prevent one cardiac event, not death. So that's pretty telling.
Yeah.
So, well, but they push them. I mean, they push them like crazy.
I'm really glad that Chrissy brought that question up, and you know, gives us another opportunity to talk about it. And, you know, and cause I know there's a lot of people in similar scenarios who are, hearing different things from different specialists. So, so thank you for Chrissy for,
but yeah, in your case, I would do it. Check.
All right, let's keep moving here. Heather, it's so good to see you. Thank you for being in here. Cancer seems to be on the rise. What are your thoughts on liquid biopsy for detection of cancers? Sounds like there's some limitations in detecting early stages. We love and appreciate you, Heather. Thank you.
Thank you for the prayers. Yeah, there seems to be just an incredible amount of new cancer cases. I saw two new cases today. And these are people that seems like they're getting it younger. You know, saw a new case of pancreatic cancer this morning that came to see me. We're seeing a lot of breast cancers. I saw a 50-year-old with colon cancer today. Hey, Izzy, what are you doing? Izzy's here early tonight. But yeah, the liquid biopsies, the blood tests, the, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. I don't think it's quite, you know, to the stage that I hope it is at some point, you know, for detection of cancer. Certainly, you know, we've had blood tests around for certain types of cancer that, you know, haven't proven to be the greatest in the world. You know, PSA, CEA, or two of the, then you have the CA-125, but they're making a lot of inroads. There's a lot, you know, that's probably going to be a really good thing. That along with a total body MRI, we're going to probably pick up a lot of things that, you know, that early, but so stay tuned for that. Great question.
Thank you, Heather.
Cancer is another cancer for whatever reason, cancer. We're seeing a lot more cancers.
Do you think that the total body MRI stuff like, Heather's talking about with a liquid biopsy, do you think that will get here before maybe our ability to interpret and strategize around what you find with, you know, the total body MRIs? Cause often you'll talk about like, what good does it do if, you know, are we unnecessarily scaring people?
Yeah, that's the question, you know, that you get a lot of false negatives and, you know, unnecessary biopsies and worry and things like that.
Heather, thank you for bringing this up. We're going to continue to talk about stuff like that. It's such a big deal, just like Doc said.
A lot of times I'll rely on, you know, listen to your own body. You know, if you feel something's off, you know, if you feel great and all, you shouldn't go looking for things, you know, unnecessarily too far. Now, the routine stuff that we recommend, certainly, but, you know, I see some people getting too obsessed about it and really it causes more harm than good. But listen to your body. If something's off,
I love this from Linda. Thank you, Linda.
Then you may want to, you know, look further.
Yeah. It's a great comment from Linda.
Is it exactly right? You know, I always say we're more accurate than they are because a lot of times there's a lot of false negatives, like I said, but great point.
All right, let's go to let's go over to Instagram. If you guys have questions on Instagram, please put them in the comments. I'm not going to be able to bring them over. I see my brother Zach is in here. Zach, what's going on, man? Thank you for all the hard work, my brother. Hat 817 is asking. I'm not going to be able to put it on the screen, guys. So I'm just going to read this off for Doc. It's coming from Instagram. The question is, I take 10 milligrams of lisinopril. Can I replace it with TMG? We've done a podcast episode on TMG, and the question is, if so, how much? What's your thoughts on this, Doc?
Replace lisinopril with trimethylglycine,
yep.
TMG?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. There are two different things that they're doing. I don't like lisinopril for one thing. I just don't like it as a blood pressure medicine. I know it's the one everybody gets on. It's a knee-jerk reaction. It's dirt cheap. But I don't like the ACE inhibitors much. About a third of the time, they cause a chronic dry cough. occasionally you'll see a severe case of angioedema with them. There's a lot safer ways to control your blood pressure, like with losartan or one of the, you know, the ARBs instead of the ACE inhibitors. But trimethylglycines, you know, use it to lower homocysteine levels more. And remember, TMG is different than glycine. TMG you should take in the morning because it's kind of energizing. Glycine is more relaxing. Mm. Take it at night if you just take that form of it. But I just try to use some. If you can get off, you know, lisinopril, I would do it. And, you know, I like garlic. I like berberine a lot. You know, I don't talk nearly enough about berberine, but berberine's great. It's just such a great, you know, supplement, especially for people that may be a little overweight or have prediabetes, metabolic syndrome, increased cholesterol, borderline hypertension. It's just an amazing compound. And I was doing a little research, you know, because we have our own form of berberine, which is dihydroberberine. That's the thing. That's why I wanted to get my own berberine, because it's way better than berberine hydrochloride or HCl. Stays around your system longer, less GI irritation. It's about 5 times as potent as the other forms. You just don't see much the dihydroberberine. That's certainly what I take. And it really helps calm down the insulin response, but it raises your HDL, lowers your blood pressure. I mean, I would take that probably over TMG if it's specifically for blood pressure. But so try to somehow get off, even if you have to take something else, get off the lisinopril. That's what I would do if it was me.
And it sounds like the TMG is not necessarily a replacement for that. And one other thing, if had 817, if there's any more context we need to see, let us know. But there is a trimethylglycine video we've done with on the Common Sense MD on the YouTube channel if you want to learn more about that. And I see G.R. Quillen's question. I'm going to put that in here pretty soon because it's around berberine. I'm going to move real quick. Actually, I think that's our next question because it's kind of timely with the berberine comment. G.R. Quillen on Instagram is asking, how does berberine compare to Mounjaro for weight loss? Is there anything you can do to help with side effects from Mounjaro? I do think you have talked about, I know it's berberine maybe in metformin as the, as the alternatives.
Well, you know, one thing is berberine is a lot cheaper than Mounjaro, but actually berberine is a GLP-1 agonist like Mounjaro. And
Ozempic. I didn't know that.
It truly acts as a GLP-1 agonist. Huh. Yeah, it does. So it's a great place for people. You're not going to lose weight as fast as you are on Ozempic or Mounjaro. You'll probably lose maybe a pound a week. Instead, you won't lose it a lot faster than that. You got to be patient with it. So when you get on berberine, give it a good 3 month trial. Take the dihydroberberine, way better. And look at all the stuff it does. It can lower your A1C by sometimes up as much as 3 points. I know it's a lot. But it can lower your blood pressure. It can raise HDL, lower LDL. It's one of the greatest supplements that there is, in my opinion, especially for America with all this metabolic syndrome going around. Even a skinny guy like me takes berberine. So I hope that helps. Was that the question, or did I start rambling?
I'm to just make sure for G.R. Quillen here, how does berberine compare to Mounjaro for weight loss? It sounds like they're similar. Oh, Mounjaro is also it's a GLP-1 plus a what's the
GIP.
GIP.
Yeah, so Mounjaro is going to be a lot more effective for, you know, especially if you're really overweight. But the problem with Mounjaro and Ozempic, for that matter, is the expense, the fact that insurance is not covering it. Of course, we found compounded forms that work great of it. tirzepatide. But certainly berberine should be in there. Berberine is just so much, it's about as effective as metformin, but without the some of the side effects of metformin.
Speaking of side effects, Doc, can you answer this for GR Quillen on Instagram? Is there anything you can do to help with the side effects with Mounjaro? I know you can kind of adjust the dose maybe, but that is a complaint that we get is the side effects from it.
Yeah, certainly Mounjaro, in my experience, has way less side effects than Ozempic and actually works a little better for weight loss. They're both great medicines. You know, Mounjaro just has that added benefit of being a GIP instead of just a GLP-1 agonist. But yeah, I mean, it's more potent. You're going to get faster weight loss with it. And, you know, it's a great medicine, but with all the great side effects like less heart disease, reversal of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, kidney protection. But side effects is usually nausea if you're going to get it. And you can lower the dose, like you said, Ben. Some people may get a little constipated with any of these medications. One is they're not eating quite as much. So increase your fiber, take Dr. Yeah. Schultz's formula if you need to. I've even had some people that have temporary nausea that I'll put on some Zofran to ease the tolerability of it. But look at the dose and go from there.
Real quick, I want to kind of double click into the berberine question. How often should patients be taking this daily? How are you dosing the berberine for weight loss in particular?
I'll start out at one tablet. I'm forgetting the milligram in there, twice a day until you lose, you know, take it with the two meals you're going to eat. And
so take it with like a lunch and dinner. Then you can back it.
Yeah, especially if you don't eat breakfast like I don't. You should be doing intermittent fasting if you're trying to lose weight, I think. But twice a day, and then you can go once a day once you get it down to your weight and just stay on it.
We're getting a lot of questions here on berberine. I'm going to get to Karen just to stay on this topic. And I see Jordan's comment. I want to get to that. But Karen is asking, is it okay to take berberine while taking Eliquis for AFib?
Yeah, I don't see any contraindications to that.
Okay. And here's another one from Kathy. Thank you, Kathy, for this. Can berberine be taken if you're on warfarin? I keep seeing warfarin. Is it warfarin?
Warfarin, yeah. It's Coumadin, which is a really potent old-timey blood thinner that some people still have to take because of artificial heart valves, that type of thing. Eliquis is the more the newer generation with less side effects. But yeah, you can, but anytime you add any vitamin or medicine in your own warfarin, then check your protons, you know, just to make sure it's not affecting it. Cause I don't think it will interfere with it, but certainly be more attuned to checking your protons when you first start taking it.
Kathy, I hope that helps. I want to, put this up here from Jordan. It's a great comment around the carnivore diet. We've been leaning more into carnivore diet. Has really helped my inflammation autoimmune issues. Thank you for putting this in here, Jordan, around the carnivore. Where I know we got a lot of fans of that diet in here. So thank you for putting that in. Real quick, I'm going to put this up just for those, again, we do have the Dr. Rogers formulas on our website, performancemedicine.net/shop. I believe... and this is on me. There's a couple supplements that aren't up there quite yet. I need to get on that. But berberine, I believe, is on there. If you guys are interested in the dihydro berberine form, we have that on the website in the Dr. Rogers formula. So I'll just keep that up there for you guys if you need it. All right, I think we got through the questions. If you guys have any more, we've got a few minutes left. We're going to have the dogs come down and sign us out as always. If those of you who are new here tonight, we do this health and wellness Q&A every Tuesday from 7 to 8. We hang out with you guys, answer questions. And I tell you what, I say this every week. We get as much from these questions as you get from our answers. So thank you guys. I want to get this from Kimberly here. See, Kimberly's got a great question, and I want to make sure we get to it. I'm going to read this for everybody. I've been told that I am a mystery. I'm a mystery too, Kimberly. I promise you that. More so since I was exposed to aspergillus. I almost died
from aspergillus.
Aspergillus. I get smarter just by
you said reading. That. You said that wrong, Ben. Yeah.
I get smarter just by reading your questions. I almost died from the exposure. It stopped me in my tracks. So many tests. I will be making an appointment soon. I was going to a couple of months ago, but my mom passed away. Goodness, I'm sorry, Kimberly. I have a question. My husband has diabetes with muscle wasting. His diabetes is not controlled on metformin and glimepiride. Diabetes runs in his family. Ozempic helps some, but was too expensive. What would you recommend? What's your thoughts on this?
If he's overweight, definitely get on semaglutide, which is the compounded form of Ozempic. And, you know, again, any of those medicines can also cause muscle wasting. So he needs to make sure he's getting enough protein. I love perfect aminos because they're already digested. I mean, we can definitely control his diabetes. There's no problem with that. We may even want to put him on, you know, something like Farxiga, or one of those. So there's definitely ways. He's skin and bones.
Huh.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I wonder if he's type 1 or type 1.5. It seems like he may be. I guess maybe he's got the wrong approach to it. I mean, we may even have to use a little bit of insulin, a touch of insulin on him, which makes you hungry. Actually, that's why weightlifters take insulin. They abuse insulin because it puts muscle on them. You believe that?
That's kind of scary. Like, I can't.
Very dangerous, but yeah, I mean, you know, he may be one I may put on a touch of it, like a once a day Lantus or Levemir or something. But glimepiride, I hate that drug. Metformin, if he's skinny and maybe can't tolerate it on his gut, may not be a good choice for him. You know, certainly he's one that needs to probably come in and see one of us that does a lot of this, maybe me or Andy. Andy's so good with diabetics. Aspergillus is a weird thing too. I had a patient in the hospital with it last week. They couldn't figure out where it came from. They wanted to put a PICC line in her. Just got out this past weekend with that. But anyway, gosh, it sounds like you're having a rough time. But, you know, hopefully if you, you know, get the right kind of treatment and eat the right kind of foods, and you can certainly regain your strength, and your husband can get control of his diabetes. You know, it's just, if somebody's willing to work with all the tools we have now, their diabetes is going to be controllable. I don't care if it's type 1, 1.5, type 2, it can be very well controlled. And, you know, that muscle wasting can be turned around too. I'd probably put him on an in-body 570 and see how much muscle he has, how much visceral fat, what his BMR is, how much water he's retaining. That's just a great baseline to get.
Well, Kimberly, thank you for that question. One, we're going to be praying for you and thinking about your husband as well. But man, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for asking the question. It's not easy to do. Doc, I'm so encouraged by that answer, because you're right. There are so many tools. Kimberly, I hope you found some encouragement. I hope your husband sees some hope in that. There's so many tools that can be used these days. So thank you, Lisa. We love you. What a show tonight, guys. And like I say every time, you guys make it. Thank you for the thoughtful questions and allowing us to be with y'all for this hour every single week. I'll put this up again if you're interested in the what is it called? The berberine performancemedicine.net/shop. We have the Burberry Max, which is the Dr. Rogers version of it, up there on the shop. Thank you to everyone on our team. I know Carter's in here. I know Katie's in here. Goodness, and I know I'm missing some, but there's so many on our team in here tonight. So thank you guys for all the hard work and being with us on these evenings. It means so much to us and everyone in here. Doc, you ready, man?
It's been fun, yeah. Listen, next time, can you change your artwork behind you? That same artwork is getting so boring. At least I've got a decent background. That is the most boring artwork I've ever seen.
I see Tabitha's in here. I just wanted to give a huge shout out to Tabitha.
Hey, Tabitha.
Over in our Kingsport office. Thank you for being in here, Tabitha. Thank you for saying hello. We love you. Kathy, thank you. I need to do something about this. You know, I need a prop, like a lamp or something that's cool. All right, guys, let us know how we did. We'll do this. We'll be back next week. We do this every single Tuesday, 7 to 8. The Performance Medicine Show, our live Q&A. Papa, love you, man. Do we have dogs closing us out, or are we closing it out ourselves?
I think the dogs have already been here and gone, so they're up playing. So
it's up to us. We're going to close the show, guys. Kathy, thank you. Sherry, thank you. Cherry, thank you. Grandma Mary, thank you. We love all of you. We'll be back next week, 7 to 8, to answer your health and wellness questions. If you're interested in any of the our formulas, check out performancemedicine.net/shop. Hopefully that helps you in some way. Doc, I love you, man. If you guys don't know, this is my dad, and I get to hang out with him every Tuesday and be uplifted, hopefully the way that he's uplifting you guys. Papa, love you, man.
Love you too, Ben. Had a good Easter with you too.
Had a blast. Had a blast. Thank you to Uncle Bill and Aunt Lisa. Uncle Bob and Aunt Lisa for having us. Papa, love you, man. We're going to sign off.
Love you too. Good night.
See you guys. Let me see my outro. Where is it at? Love you all. Don't go away.